Again, why don't we take a moment and we'll pull into the power that brought us here and keeps us here. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
I'm Nate, I'm an alcoholic. And this particular session is not necessarily one linked directly to the step process as it's outlined in the big book. We just thought it might be a great opportunity to talk bigger picture, fellowship of the Spirit. What is this? What does it look like? What is it about? What does it mean? The way that we're connecting here over the course of the weekend, what is that all about, right? What is that? And it just so happens that the original Fellowship of the Spirit that was, I call it the mothership out in Colorado because they're sprouting up all over the place now. But boy, there's something special about that one in Colorado. If you ever have the opportunity to go out there and check it out, it's really an experience to be had. And we just so happened to have one of the founders of that conference at this table with us. So I thought when I had an opportunity to take a pass at the format, I'd throw that on there and see how he responded to it. So I love the story. I'm hoping all of you do, too, because it's a good one. So why don't you tell us all about it, Mickey?
Thank you, Nate. So there's a hunger in us. There's a yearning in us for health and stability and recovery in our lives, or we wouldn't have taken the time, for instance, to come here this weekend. We could be anywhere. We could be doing anything. And instead, we paid money, we came here, we traveled here, because there's something that we're looking for. You know, what makes Sammy run? Well, we can be driven, but we're also going forward for something. We're looking for something. And the book that we just raffled off, Thomas Merton's New Seeds of Contemplation. So I'm 1 year sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and as I've shared, I'm listening to people talk about the drinking and so on, and I'm dying inside. And it's like, not only is Alcoholics Anonymous counterculture, and counterintuitive, counterculture from the sense that we're like a sub-society. People don't know a lot about who we are. Do we have, like, you know, purple heads or what the hell is, you know, going on with us? But then we're supposed to, when you're riding a motorcycle, you want to turn this way. You can actually push them. You can push the handlebars this way, and it's counterintuitive, and you think, God, I'm going to do that, and this bike's going to go over, and it goes over beautifully. So we're having this move in our lives that's counterintuitive. We're going to surrender to win. We're going to take our hands off of our lives and somehow or other, like what, the motorcycle's going to drive itself? Apparently we're relying on that. So I'm coming unglued. I'm coming apart, and I'm going up the chain of everybody I know, looking for a guru. Somebody's going to lay hands on me. Somebody's going to tell me, man, even though I've been doing the step work, I'm still coming apart inside. What is wrong? And I saw one of the head dudes, and he looks at me and says, I don't know, man, maybe you're going to drink. I'm 1 year sober. I have a wife. I have a daughter. I am not thirsty. I don't know what's wrong with me. Thomas Merton says in the book you just got, Mike, and I would like to point out a few chapters for you because I've been reading them for over 40 years. The same chapters. There are other chapters in the book, but these chapters describe my experience in let's call it the dark night of recovery. In the dark night of the soul there, he says, is a terrible crashing and burning of idols, sacred cows. things that I have clung to, right? I'll get through it if I can do this. And then I can't, I'm trying to do that and it's not working. And I'm going like, if I had had the words, I would have said, God, I thought you loved me. I'm asking you for help and you're the good God. And where's the help? So I got that book and I started reading it and I said, oh my God, I'm having a spiritual experience. And I'm 28 years old. And who the hell's going to listen to me? I've flunked everything, but I've got it in here, in this book from a trusted guy, from trusted sources, that this is the way God acts sometimes. Now, not all the time. Not everybody has this experience, but I was having this experience. And it's like my life. So it's important to me and to my wife and to my baby. So I start this journey alone. Now, when I say alone, I had a sponsor, I was talking to people, I was going to meetings, but I'm having, God bless you, I saw the wind-up on that, was a good one. and so I'm, now, how many of us in this room really enjoy being alone? Would you, okay, that's good. How many of us in this room enjoy being alone when your life is on the line? Like this lady. God bless you, Tara. Get up here. You're doing this session. Thank you. What I'm trying to paint is a picture of, like, at when you're sober, how would you like to have responsibility for your own life without the group hanging around you and supporting what you're doing? And that was the position I was forced into. And I thought, you know what it is? I wanted to shut up. I thought I was like an AA heretic. I thought I was out full of malarkey because it's coming from me. Do you understand? I mean, even though I read it in the book, it's coming from me. What have I got? So I go along in my time in this program, and I'm not saying other people are wrong. I'm not saying I'm better than. I'm just talking about, in my experience, being different than. You guys don't know what angels you are. I was talking with some ladies before this meeting, and I was talking to a man the other night, and it's put the fire back in my soul. Because what I'm hearing is like, look, I'm 5 years sober, and I just filed bankruptcy. File for bankruptcy. That's what I'm talking about. Where do I fit in? Where do I claim recovery? If I'm having to sell my house, or I can't get a job, or what's going on in my life? So I go along trying to like snake my way through. When I mean it, I was like hiding, because we come in here, we have the herd experience, right? We're part of the herd, and the arms are wrapped around us, and we're like, we belong. Well, I'm coming in, the arms were wrapped around me, and I'm coming unwrapped, and I don't get it. And then I start to get a little bit of a clue. Well, I hid until I was, off and on, until I was 18 years sober. It's a long time. And, I mean, I was going out and giving talks, and I would pattern them on what I saw somebody else do. I don't know if this weekend has been unique for you, if it seems different than what you normally hear. I don't know. But I can tell you that that was my experience. So at 18 years sober, Don Pritz left our home group and went to work in North Carolina. And I don't know if you saw the movie The Exorcist. You know how she could do like a full head swivel? And every head in that room turned around and looked at me, because I was sort of the ranking by years member in that home group. And they looked at me, and I was forced into some kind of leadership in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the wraps came off, and I was telling the truth about what's going on. Now, I looked for support, too, and I would get it from people, and they would say, I would say, can you tell me why when we're out talking about things, we're not talking about the disease of alcoholism? Can you tell me why it's continuing to be this way? And I've been, I mean, this is recently. This is even 5 years ago. And I said, like, I'm the only one who's standing up talking about the disease of alcoholism. This is not, I'm not elite. It's not that. Please hear me. It's just my life. Are we going to speak from who we are? And I'm talking about within the bounds of this book. I'm not talking about going out and creating a different fellowship. It's in this book. And I called one of the people you're going to have coming in for your fellowship of the Spirit deal. And he said, that's why we're out there, Mickey. And I don't want to be different then. I want to be, it's like when I was a little boy, I'll tell you this story. I grew up in Europe, so we would get our presents, our Christmas presents, from the United States. My parents would arrange for it to come over. And so we're in Italy, and I'm 5 years old. And I got two older brothers, and I got a cousin who's older than me, too. And his mother lives with us, my aunt. And so we got that going on, and everybody gets an Indian outfit, excuse me, a cowboy outfit. And they all got the chaps, and they got the guns, and they got the hat and everything. And I open up my package, and there's a bow and arrow and a hatchet, and I'm 5 years old, and I am like the junior G-man in the whole family. And I'm crying, man. I'm losing it. It's like, what the hell? I don't belong anywhere, baby. And my aunt wrapped her arms around me, and she says, it's okay, honey. You're just a different kind of cowboy. So this is coming from a different kind of cowboy, but... But I have found that there are many of us in our fellowship who are going along and will sit in meetings and we're mute and we're not telling anybody, listen, this is not working out for me. This is not working out for me. And we become convinced of that. So where does that have to do with fellowship of the Spirit? A few of us have been going around the country and doing more intimate conferences, speaking, really. And the only conference we had in Alcoholics Anonymous in Colorado was the state convention. And there were 1,500 people that would show up for that. And they had breakout rooms for non-smokers, and they'd have closed-circuit TV going on and everything. And we wanted an opportunity to be closer to people. So Marie and I, my wife and I, and Don Pritz got to talking about it. And Gary Brown, as a matter of fact, I was out in Indianapolis. Gary was living in a trailer in those days. It's part of his story that's way, way cool. Anyway, and very threatening. I'll let him tell you. Anyway, so I'm sitting on the floor of his trailer, and I'm sitting there with a guy named Mike L. out of Indianapolis, and who is now my sponsor. And we're sitting there, we're talking about doing a conference like this, you know. And so we came back, and Marie and I put in $250. And Don put in $250. And we said, okay, Don, we'll get the hotel, we'll get the facility, Marie and I, and take care of that, and you provide manpower and womanpower. So that's what we did. And we said, okay, we're going to structure it. We're going to configure it this way. We're going to have it in the mountains so we can show off our mountains and give people an opportunity to be in beauty while they're experiencing recovery. So we'll do it in the mountains, and we'll have speakers come in, and then we'll have lots of time for people to relax and go out and enjoy the mountains. And then Don goes, he says, why don't we have step workshops. We'll have a workshop on every step. And in my brain, I'm going, no, let's not do that. And it's the heart of our conference. It's the heart of our conference. We have people come in and do panels. There'll be three alcoholics and an Al-Anon on every panel, on every step in the program. I'll get into the Al-Anon side in a bit. And so the conference is packed. It's wall to wall, man. You can't turn around, but you're running into yourself. And And when we had our first conference, it was in 1993 in Breckenridge, and you know how we choose themes like you did for this conference this year, Spearheads of God's Ever-Advancing Creation. Well, I picked Fellowship of the Spirit. So it was like Fellowship of the Spirit, Breckenridge. No, it was Breckenridge Conference, Fellowship of the Spirit. So we came to do that thing, and what happened is we had people from New Mexico show up, and in their rooms they were cooking enchiladas, and we had people from Louisiana, and they were, you know, serving shrimp etouffee and all of this, and then different people, and we would kind of wander around. 225 people showed up for the first year. 225 people, and the reason they showed up is because Don Pritz was involved, and he'd been traveling all over the country. And we had people from 25 states come to our first conference because of Don. So I noticed that, like, I'd go into a room and there'd be a girl from New York sitting next to a bourré out of Louisiana, and they're talking about things, and she says, and I just caught it out of the corner of my mouth, where did you get that fourth column in the resentment thing, you know what I mean? And it's like, I'm watching this, and there's this interchange going on. And at one point in the conference, I went out on the balcony to just look at the mountains and get a breather, because as I say, it's very busy. And I'm standing out there, and over here, not so far, maybe from me to Hunter, there's a guy standing out there, and he's doing the same thing, and I notice that the tears are just gently rolling down his cheeks. And I walked over and I said, pardon me, you mind if I ask, are you okay? And he said, yeah. And I said, do you mind if I ask why you're crying? And he said, there are three of us in Muscatine, Iowa, around our big book. And I'm crying because I've never seen so many people actually work a program out of the big book. And I'm going like, ding, in the head here. And it's like, wait a minute. Now, I know that there are places in this country, and probably, you know, in Atlanta, and we got people who are really out of the book, and they're really doing the thing. But if you were to travel around this country and around the world, I would promise you that that's not the common experience. That is not the common experience. What common experience? To work the program out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. What? Is that nuts or what? But I think it's really alcoholic. Would you agree? You know, I know they wrote it down, but here's what it really says. And we take others with us. And the standard becomes my sponsor says. My sponsor says, I'm not going to put my life in my sponsor's hands. I will put his counsel and I will include it in my life. But by God, my life is going to go in God's hands. And it's really this tremendously risky proposition, would you agree? I'm talking emotionally. It's like, okay, you know, you were sharing with us when you picked us up about some of the decisions you make and your family's being aghast when you keep saying God will take care of it. It's like, what? So we got this picture that there was something lacking, and it wasn't just where we were. That's that hunger again for recovery. And I didn't know how to articulate it. I didn't know what was happening. And people were telling me, Mickey, your sponsorship is different than I've ever experienced. And I'm going, what are we talking about? It's written right here in the book. How can it be different? And so, in the course of it, it says in the big book, he will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. And it's taken a while. We've done the Fellowship of the Spirit Conference in Colorado. This, we just had our 24th one. And we call it the Miracle on the Mountain, because people will come out. I'm talking about step working people. Pardon me, will come up on the mountain and be around the workshops and the speakers and other people, right association, and the jet engine, the turbine gets turned over, and they come off the mountain fire-breathing AA folks. That's God's business, you understand? We wanted a conference for the people of Colorado. And we got a conference. We've had people fly in from Vietnam, from London, from Australia, from Germany, from the Ukraine, fly into the conference. There are now 22 Fellowship of the Spirit conferences in the world. I'm going to have an opportunity with my wife to go and speak at Fellowship of the Spirit Northern California coming up in 2017, around this time next year. And this guy who's throwing this shindig just pulled off two tours in Russia. And in the Russia, he got to visit with the people at Fellowship of the Spirit Moscow. I got a chance to talk to the people at Fellowship of the Spirit Johannesburg, South Africa. Not there, but by Skype. And in the run-up to that, I asked this guy, I said, can you tell me why you call your conference Fellowship of the Spirit? And he said, Mickey, I've listened to every tape, every, what do we call them now?
Recording.
Recording, yeah, of your conferences from 1995 to now. What's the message? I believe the message is Alcoholics Anonymous. There's no secret handshake. There's no letter sweater. We don't all wear the same beanie. But it is right out of the big book, and it's really an honest attempt to share. And it's family-oriented. It's not like when we have speakers, we don't have people who are like really very smooth in their presentations. They're family. They're family with us, and they're sharing about what they have. And we've insisted on Al-Anon being part of it. We have Al-Anons on our board of directors. And the reason is, you ever noticed in your time going to conferences that the Al-Anon is always put like on Saturday morning? Mm-hmm. And you know who shows up for the Al-Anon talks? Like, very few people show up. It's disrespectful. Let's put Al-Anon into focus for a moment. You know, all the things we talk about are kind of mother-in-law statistics and stuff about how many of us there are and what the common wisdom is, and that one out of 10 have this disease. We can't prove that statistically. It just seems to be the way it is. But here's a statistic, a mother-in-law statistic. For every alcoholic, 6 other people are affected. Right? So by rights, Al-Anon ought to be 6 times larger than AA. And it is not. And the Al-Anons have a deadly disease. They have alcoholism without the bottle. And their suicide rate is pretty fierce. And so we're going to take that person and we're going to disrespect them. And we're going to throw them a slot like you throw somebody a bone. So in Fellowship of the Spirit Conference, the Al-Anon speaks on Friday night and the AA speaks on Saturday morning in the schedule. And we get these most amazing Al-Anon talks. Somebody was telling me, I can't remember who it was, that you heard one of the best talks from an Al-Anon out of a conference opportunity. So we have human beings that are sharing this experience of alcoholism together. And the spin-offs are amazing. So what's the message? It's the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's safety. This is our bullshit sifter. We are a very strong personality people. And you know, some of us can talk really well and we can convince people. And it's real easy to convince somebody who's just coming in off the ropes out of drinking. And we can hammer them. And I want to share what I was talking with Mary. And
Danielle.
Sorry?
Danielle.
I have a friend from Santa Fe, New Mexico, and he was going to speak in Oklahoma. And there was this guy who's now deceased. Apparently, I never met him. He was a tall minister, and he was out on the circuit and so on and so on. And he went to Tom before he talked. Right before he talked, he said, Tom, and he had spoken before Tom, and he said, Tom, I got to go. I apologize, but I have got an emergency. I have to leave. And he says, I have one bit of advice for you. Give them heaven. They've had enough hell. Mm-hmm. We think if it's soft edge, it's not going to register. And it's not true. You know, we have weight in our message because it's the truth. It's the truth. You may not like the picture, but it's the truth. And the truth has its own weight. So we watched this conference happen, and our plans were this big, and God's plans were this big. I would like to tell you that we changed the world. We have Fellowship of the Spirit, Ukraine, Moscow, Dublin, Johannesburg, South Africa, and all over the country. It is just AA. It's okay. And there's no substructure. There's no, we're all going to have a meeting as Fellowship of the Spirit people and have a separate structure. It's not that. We participate in our own service structures. We do all of that. But we are attracted to each other for real recovery, for real recovery, for where it really hurts, for those things that are impossible. All that weight we're carrying on 52, is it possible to lift my chin up and live a life and really make connection? And it is. So, the big surprise, right? And I will tell you that the Fellowship of the Spirit Conference was born in blood. We had arguments. It was so bad. We used to meet at my house to get the first one going. And it got so ugly, the politics of that, that I resigned from the board after the first year. And they wouldn't accept my resignation. I got pinned to the wall in my own house. We really hammered it out, man. We really hammered it out. And it turns out that it's really, really been effective. How effective is it? My wife just got a text from a lady in Sweden who really, well, let's get into some Al-Anon stuff. Are you aware that the Big Book is no longer official literature for Al-Anon? They cannot use the Big Book in their meetings. No. Now, when AA and Al-Anon got started, it was like Al-Anon was, you know, AA auxiliary. You know, what other book do we have? What other understanding do we have of this disease? So, because Marie and I got rolling in this in 1974, there was no other literature. And Al-Anon, rightly so, probably wants their own literature. But to eliminate the Big Book in the process really is a sticking point. It's a real sticking point. And I hope one day that will be resolved. But what happens is that the Big Book is allowed at the meetings in the Fellowship of the Spirit Conference. Because if we understand things correctly, these conferences are not state-sanctioned. They're not part of the state service structure. They're conferences. We use the same traditions and the same steps, but they are independent, autonomous conferences. It disturbs people. I remember I was out dancing. I'm not really a very good dancer. But I promised Marie we'll have one dance every conference. And I was dancing out with Marie on the floor, and there'd been a guy drifting in from New York, and he had found out, he just saw on the schedule, I guess online or whatever, that there was a conference over here, and he popped in. When he found out we had Al-Anons involved in decision-making in our conference, he went nuts, and he started quoting all the rules and regulations of GSO and the rest of it. And I'm out dancing with my wife, and this guy's still hammering me as I'm dancing with my wife. I told you, it's born in blood. But what has happened is that the Al-Anons, my wife still works her program out of the Big Book. And she works with other women out of the Big Book. They can also read the literature of Al-Anon. They do that thing. But you would be amazed, or would you not be amazed, what happens to a lady or a man in Al-Anon if they get a shot to work in the steps out of the Big Book? They experience a recovery like we do. So if we're going to fight for human beings' lives, let's fight with a full deck. Heresy? Are we doing heresy here? There's truth in everything. If we can find the truth as it's applied to this disease and it works, let's do it. So that's the kind of dance we've done, and I could go in deeper to it. But the net of it is, when we had our 24th conference this past July, we meet at the last full weekend in July. We go Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And we asked for a show of hands of how many people were new in that conference, and half the people in that room raised their hands. That they had never been to a Fellowship of the Spirit conference before, and they raised their hands. And they came out like gangbusters, wound up. I'm not saying everybody's going to be twinkle toes coming out of this thing. But I'm saying the opportunity is there if we get our heart open to the message that's in this book. So, what a surprise. What a surprise. What a lovely surprise. And it's about people who are filing for bankruptcy and they're really working their programs. It's about people who have gotten discouraged in their lives, and they're fighting to have a real life and have some of these promises occur in their lives. And the whole thing is structured that way. And the message goes over and over and over again. And the people on the panels are from Dayton, Ohio. They're from Cincinnati. They're from, you know, Aspen. They're from whatever. And they're all on these panels, and they do an hour. And then we have an open mic. And the open mic is you can come up and offer your opinion. And it's not to be critical of us, because we also have a feature at the end of the conference called the conscience of the conference. You got something you don't like, come in and say it. You like something you did like, come in and say it. And the board is in there, and the committee that put the conference on is in there. There's nothing hidden in here. This is really rock and roll. So, it's traveled like wildfire. It's traveled just like the message of Alcoholics Anonymous did initially. It's just gone out, right out over the world. It's wild, huh? Does anybody have any questions about this or any comments? Okay. I think since... would you like to say anything about your own experience with Fellowship of the Spirit?
Sure.
Nephites, Colorado, anything?
Yeah. My experience is not nearly as robust as Mr. Musset here, because he's been sober longer than I've been born. But
what?
But for me, too, just the context of Fellowship of the Spirit is essentially what's happening right here, right now, amongst us this weekend, the connectedness, right? Because it is, for me, it's so much more than an actual conference. I mean, the fire that one alcoholic talking to another and really having an experience where you're talking to me and I know for a fact you know exactly where I've been and maybe even where I'm at right now. And there's a comfort that just comes about me through that experience where I don't feel that with everyone, right? I mean, if just going to random meetings in my own community, more often than not, I'll experience, you know, spirit of the fellowship. It's kind of the inverse of that, right? Where everybody's real excited to be together, and, you know, we're talking, and we're excited to see at the next meeting, and there's a spirit about it, about the fellowship, but it's different. It's not the fellowship of the Spirit, right? It's not, I don't feel like you're peering into my soul right now, kind of thing, right? Because when I connect with someone like that, it's almost unsettling, but at the same time, it's just so comforting. And I remember, for the sake of the story, there was, I don't even remember what year it was, but Mickey had been called, this was before I knew Mickey, had been called to put on a big book retreat weekend up in Maine on the coast, beautiful little camp called Tanglewood is the name of the retreat. And we went there. I went there with my posse, you know, because I was young and raging and super excited about recovery. You know, I went with my 15 AA frat brothers, right? And we always rolled in packs, because that's what you have to do when you're running from yourself. That's how I run. And we went up to this conference, and I'm just thinking, you know, great, it'll be a good opportunity to learn some new tips and tricks, meet some new people. And all of a sudden, I'm sitting in the chair, you know, thinking I'm going to have a nice light experience over the course of that weekend. Then all of a sudden, Mickey opens his mouth. And the next thing you know, I'm just like, I'm like pegged in my chair, where the feeling that I had come over me was almost like, there is so much wrong with my program right now. You know, I'm doing nothing of what he's talking about. Right? Wow, that seems like a pretty tall order to be kind of living a program like he's talking about it. And it wasn't like, it wasn't anything like, you know, superiority or anything like that. It was just like, this man has a connection with God that I've never even considered. That was what I was attracted to. How does someone have God in their life like that? And as any good alcoholic would, conference wrapped up, we thanked him, and I went right back to my life the way it was. Because I wasn't about to make any changes, right? So the first time that I experienced that genuine, true connectedness, I absolutely didn't jump on the bandwagon and act on it, right? I thought it was a fluke. I was like, whatever, you know, that's for them, that's not for me, right? And I didn't even necessarily make that conscious decision at the time. But wouldn't you know it, from that day forward, periods would come where all of a sudden, have you ever had an experience where all of a sudden you just have this burning intuition to like reach out to someone specifically? You just don't really know where it comes from, but it's like, I need to talk to this person as it relates to my recovery specifically. For me, that's happened a few different times. And I started to experience that with Mickey, and I was like, no. I mean, I suppressed that for probably 2 years. And the next thing, he came up to our Fellowship of the Spirit in Portland, Maine, which is the Northeast Fellowship of the Spirit, and gave a Sunday talk, and it was like, great, you know, good to see you. Love Mickey, love the message. And I had his phone number for 2.5 years at this point, I think, and it took me another, I think, 8 months beyond that. It took a dark winter night in December in Maine where I was locked in my bathroom, had been married like 3 months, and I'm like, basically called out of my mind, losing my shit, where I was like, I think the only thing I knew how to say was like, I feel like an alien in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know? My cool guy card is all of a sudden burning off. I don't feel genuine. You know? I don't feel like anything that I'm doing in Alcoholics Anonymous anymore are fulfilling me in the way that they used to, or the way that I used to be able to, all of a sudden, like the whole crew that I came in with, the people I used to run with, either they're all disappearing or I'm just drifting away from them and I don't know where I fit anymore. I just start to feel like an alien in the fellowship that saved my life. And go figure, right? Like that's all it took. By the end of that hour-long conversation where I thought I was like this close to being done with AA and practically like on the verge of death was the way that I thought it was going. He backed me up against the corner and said, before we get off the phone, is there anything else you want to ask me? I was like, no, I don't think so. I just want to call and say hi, check in. Thanks for tearing my soul apart. 45-minute conversation. And he asked me that 4 more times. You want to talk about uncomfortability on the other end of a phone? Is there anything else you want to ask me? I'm like, I don't think so. No. Are you sure? There's nothing you want to ask me. It's like, you be my sponsor. You know? And that was at the point where I didn't even know I wanted that, though. You know what I mean? I was like, I was so confused with where I was at in Alcoholics Anonymous that I thought for sure I was like, I was hooked in with people that were rocking and rolling, but there was something wrong here, and I couldn't quite put my finger on it. And it was, thank God for that fellowship of the Spirit, the connection, the movement, because that's what pulled me in. Right, it was just one alcoholic talking to another on the level that actually matters for me, right? And Mickey, you know, he's not God; he's a human being, just the same as the rest of us, you know. And I certainly appreciate the humanism in everyone, but the reality is that a lot of the time God will send help in the form of a human. I haven't had too many experiences where God has come down himself and said, all right, hey, let's figure this out, right? I wish it was. It's like the joke where the man's on top of the roof with the flood, right? And he's sitting there, and the water's rising, and he's praying to God, please rescue me, save me, save me. And, you know, a boat pulls up. He says, get in, let's get you out of here. He's like, all right, I'm good, I prayed, God's on the way. So the boat takes off, and then a helicopter comes by and is like, come up the ladder. You've got about a foot more and you're underwater, pal. He's like, no, I prayed. I believe. I have faith. So the water comes up, swallows him down, and he dies. And he goes up to the pearly gates, and God is, and he's like, God, I thought you loved me, right? Why didn't you save me? He's like, I sent you a boat. I sent you a helicopter. You took neither, right? Like, that's the joke for me a lot of the time. I don't pay attention to these people that God sends into my path because I'm thinking, like, I just want the direct connection to the source. For me, God is in people. My greatest, growth spurts and teachers that I've had in the program are people. You know, I mean, love the idea of being able to rely on God, but I'm not the kind of guy that can just rely on God. I just can't do it in a vacuum. I can't just say, I trust God, I'm going to sort it out with God, I prayed about it, I'm good to go. Because again, my mind is still operative in that equation, and that's bad news. So,
let me say something.
Yeah.
There's another phenomenon that happens, and I alluded to it earlier, and I've seen it in Nate's life, and it happened to me, and that is when we get seriously involved in the desire for divine intimacy, God will reserve us for Him. He will reserve us for Him. So we're going along part of the herd, and the next thing you know, we're working with somebody. I got a sponsor in Indianapolis. We got people. We do a network. I'll get a call and say, hey, man, I got somebody from Stone Mountain, Georgia, about to come over to your neck of the woods, and he'd like a contact, and boom, next thing you know, Mike is sitting in my house, and we got some friends surrounding him. We're having a potluck dinner in my TV room, and he's surrounded by the fellowship of the Spirit, by Alcoholics Anonymous, by God. But in the process, we'll find ourselves going along, and we're part of something, or we're struggling to be a part of a fellowship that we've claimed and said, this is going to work. And we go and seek God, and God pulls us right out of that sucker. And the next thing you know, you've got best friends that are in Colorado instead of in Portland, Maine. And it's like, well, that can't be it. That can't be the answer. The helicopter and the, you see what I'm saying? And our son, as I've shared, as a Catholic priest, and Nate and his beautiful wife, Lindsay, came out, and he married them in Boulder, and he was instrumental in helping them get all of the paperwork taken care of so that they could get married in the church, and Marie and I were witness, and I sponsored two ladies. I've sponsored one for 20 years, and she is Lindsay's, his wife's sponsor. And so Cheryl was there, and Marie and I, and Father Peter, and we had this thing, and it's like, and I just watched it from Northwest Fellowship of the Spirit. A bunch of people went out. They came to Colorado to be with us, and then they went back to outside Seattle to have their own Northwest Fellowship of the Spirit conference, and people from Colorado had fallen in love with them, and they followed them out there, and I sponsor the president of the board of the Northwest Fellowship of the Spirit conference in Seattle. And he's going like, man, I have friends, right? Well, he's surrounded by people right there in Seattle. But the connection he's made is in Colorado or in Maine. It's this kind of a global deal. And does it matter where your friends are? I work with Will. Will's in Brooklyn. You know, he just drove down here from Brooklyn to be with us here. And he made a comment, which I'm going to share, which I think is just a real description of what happens when love is there. He said, I haven't seen Will in 2 years, maybe a little longer than that. He said, it's like we haven't missed a day. You know what I'm saying? It's like we haven't missed a day because that connection is there. We talk every week. Now, I talk with people that I sponsor in Denver. I talk with them across the phone. I very rarely see them. They don't come to my meeting. I don't see them. Where do I see them? I see them at the Fellowship of the Spirit conference. But I'm just saying, it's this weird thing that when the closer you get to divine intimacy, if you ever get just plucked right out of the circumstances that you've relied on, it's the equivalent, forgive me, of saying that this place has the power. Because it's connected to the monastery, and I'm saying, yeah, that's very real. But in a lady that I listened to gave a talk one time, she says, if you have to have the bells and the incense and all that stuff to meditate, they're doing the meditating. We can meditate in the middle of a mechanic shop. because it's us. It's the God in us. Now, if we're going to give our wills and our lives to God, do you think he might dislocate them? I am closer to people really around the country than I am to the people in my own crew, in my own home group. So what? So what? We support each other. There's an invention called the telephone, and now the Skyping thing is out of hand. So if we're not going to be willing to be dislocated, you know, well, here's what they told me when I first got sober. They said, Mickey, if you don't want an elephant in your front room, don't make friends with the elephant trainer. Does that make sense? Because things will happen because God is real. Imagine just for a moment, what if God really existed? I mean, seriously, put that together. He makes Jupiter and he's making the moon and the sun. What if he's real? Holy moly. Right? Would we have a little more confidence in him? But we're always speaking to him through a megaphone. So if we rub up against him, you know what happens to us? We become more godlike. It's true. We don't become God. We become more godlike. You know, when we tell somebody we love them, we actually mean it. And they actually know it. And we get to share that in here. So if this has sounded like heresy and you've been uncomfortable during this conversation, I would totally understand that. I just wanted to let you know what happened to us. You know, what is possible. And for two people, three people, to start a conference that has changed the world literally, I would love to say that that's bragging. It's not bragging. We set this thing and we, right? Any more than like, you know, Bill Gates can say that he really did everything in Microsoft. He didn't. He got the impetus to do it, and look what's happened. And I think that's the way God works. So we're not alone in this thing. I guess that's all I've got. Thank you for listening. Yeah.
Can we just wrap it up and pick back up whenever?
We pick back up at...